Chapter 40 Hunter of Trollocs. Remnants of the early morning rain still dripped from the leaves of the apple trees, and a purple finch hopped along a limb where fruit was forming that would not be harvested this year. The sun was well up, but hidden behind thick gray clouds. Seated cross-legged on the ground, Perrin unconsciously tested his bowstring. The tightly wrapped, waxed cords had a tendency to go slack in wet weather. The storm Varen had called up to hide them from pursuit the night of the rescue had surprised even her with its ferocity, and beating rains had come three more times in the 6 days since. He believed it was 6 days. He had not really thought since that night, only drifted as events took him, reacting to what presented itself. The flat of his axe blade dug into his side, but he hardly noticed. Low, grassy mounds marked generations of Ebaras buried here. The oldest among the carved wooden headpieces, cracked and barely legible, bore dates nearly 300 years old, over graves indistinguishable from undisturbed ground. It was the mounds smoothed by rains but barely covered by grass that stabbed him. Generations of Ebaras buried here, but surely never 14 at one time. Aunt Nian, over by Uncle Carlin's older grave, with their two children beside her. Great-Aunt Eelson, in the row with Uncle Elward and Aunt Magda, and their three children. The long row with his mother and his father. Adora, Dazelle, and little Pate. A long row of mounds with bare, wet earth still showing through the grass. He counted the arrows remaining in his quiver by touch. 17. Too many had been damaged, worth recovering only for the steel arrowheads. No time to make his own. He would have to see the Fletcher in Emmons Field soon. Buell Daughtry made good arrows, even better than Tam. A faint rustle behind his back made him sniff the air. "What is it, Dan'l?" he said without looking around. There was a catch of breath, a moment of startled surprise, but Dan'l Lewin said, "The lady is here, Perrin." None of them had gotten used to him knowing who was who before he saw them, or in the dark, but he no longer cared what they found strange. He frowned over his shoulder. Dan'l looked leaner than he had. Farmers could only feed so many at once, and food had been feast or famine as the hunting went. Mostly famine. "The lady?"
"The Lady Fael. And Lord Luke, too. They came from Emmons Field."
Perrin rose smoothly, taking long strides that made Dan'l hurry to keep up. He managed not to look at the house, the charred timbers and sooty chimneys that had been the house where he grew up. He did scan the trees for his lookouts, those nearest the farm. Close to the waterwood as it was, the land had plenty of tall oak and hemlock, and good-sized ash and bay. Thick foliage hid the lads well. Drab farm clothes made for good hiding. So even he had difficulty picking them out. He would have to talk with those farther out. They were supposed to see that no one came close without a warning. Even Fael and this Luke. The camp, in a large thicket where he had once pretended to be in a far wilderness, was a rough place among the undergrowth, with blankets strung between trees to make shelters and more scattered on the ground between the small cook fires. The branches dripped here, too. Most of the nearly 50 men in the camp, all young, were unshaven, either an imitation of Perrin or because it was unpleasant shaving in cold water. They were good hunters, he had sent home any who were not, but unaccustomed to more than a night or two outdoors at a time, and not used to what he had them doing, either. Right then, they were standing around, gaping at Fael and Luke, and only 4 or 5 had longbow in hand. The rest of the bows lay with the bedding, and the quivers too, more often than not. Luke stood idly flipping the reins of a tall black stallion, the very pose of indolent red-coated arrogance, cold blue eyes ignoring the men around him. The man's smell stood out among the others, cold and separate too, almost as if he had nothing in common with the men around him, not even humanity. Fael came hurrying to meet Perrin with a smile, her narrow divided skirts making a soft whisk-whisk as gray silk brushed silk. She smelled faintly of sweet herbal soap and of herself.
Master Luhan said we might find you here.
He meant to demand what she was doing there, but found himself putting his arms around her and saying into her hair,
It's good to see you. I've missed you.
She pushed back enough to look up at him.
You look tired.
He ignored that. He had no time to be tired.
You got everyone safely to Women's Field?
They are at the Wine Spring Inn. She grinned suddenly.
Master Alvear found an old halberd and says if the White Cloaks want them, they will have to go through him.
Everyone's in the village now, Perrin. Varen and Alana, the warders. Pretending to be someone else, of course, and loyal. He certainly created a sensation, even more than Bane and Chiad.
The grin faded into a frown.
He asked me to deliver a message to you. Alana vanished twice without a word, once alone. Loyal said, Ivan seemed surprised to find her gone. He said I wasn't to let anyone else know.
She studied his face.
What does it mean, Perrin?
Nothing, maybe. Just that I can't be sure I can trust her. Varen warned me against her, but can I trust Varen?
You say Bane and Chiad are in Emmons Field?
I suppose that means he knows about them.
He jerked his head toward Luke. A few of the men had approached him, asking diffident questions, and he was answering with a condescending smile.
They came with us, she said slowly. They are scouting around your camp now. I do not think they have a very high opinion of your sentries.
Perrin, why don't you want Luke to know about the Aiel?
I've talked to a number of people who were burned out.
Luke was too far to overhear, but he held his voice low.
Counting Flan Lewin's place, Luke was at 5 on the day they were attacked, or the day before.
Perrin, the man's an arrogant fool in some ways. I hear he's hinted at a claim to one of the Borderland thrones for all he's told us he's from Murindi. But you cannot really believe he is a dark friend. He gave some very good advice in Emmons Field. When I said everyone was there, I meant everyone.
She shook her dark head wonderingly.
Hundreds and hundreds of people have come in from north and south, from every direction, with their cattle and their sheep, all talking of Perrin Goldeneyes' warnings. Your little village is preparing to defend itself if need be. And Luke has been everywhere the last days.
Perrin who?
He gasped, wincing. Trying to change the subject, he said,
From the south? But this is as far south as I've gone. I haven't talked to a farmer more than a mile below the Wine Spring water.
Fael tugged at his beard with a laugh.
News spreads, my fine general. I think half of them expect you to form them into an army and chase the Trollocs all the way back to the Great Blight. There will be stories about you in the Two Rivers for the next 1,000 years. Perrin Goldeneyes, hunter of Trollocs.
Light, he muttered.
Hunter of Trollocs. There had been little so far to justify that. 2 days after freeing Mistress Luhan and the others, the day after Varen and Tomas rode on their own way, they had come on the still-smoking ruins of a farmhouse, he and the 15 Two Rivers lads with him then. After burying what they found in the ashes, it was easy enough to follow the Trollocs, between Gaul's tracking and his own nose. The sharp-fetid stink of the Trollocs had not had time to fade away, not to him. Some of the lads had grown hesitant when they realized he meant what he had said about hunting Trollocs. If they had had to go very far, he suspected most would have drifted away when no one was looking. But the trail led to a thicket no more than 3 miles off. The Trollocs had not bothered with sentries. They had no murdrel with them to overawe their laziness. And the Two Rivers men knew how to stalk silently. 32 Trollocs died, many in their filthy blankets, pierced through with arrows before they could raise a howl, much less sword or axe. Danil and Ban and the others had been ready to celebrate a great triumph, until they found what was in the Trolloc's big iron cookpot sitting in the ashes of the fire. Most dashed away to throw up, and more than one wept openly. Perrin dug the grave himself. Only one. There was no way to tell what had belonged to whom. Cold as he felt inside, he was not sure he could have stood it himself, if there had been. Late the next day, no one hesitated when he picked up another fetid trail, though a few mutters wondered what he was following, until Gaul found the tracks of hooves and boots too big for men. Another thicket, close to the waterwood, held 41 trollocs and a fade, with sentries set, though most snored at their posts. It would have made no difference had they all been awake. Gaul killed those that were, sliding through the trees like a shadow, and the Two Rivers men were nearly 30 themselves by then. Besides, those who had not seen the cookpot had heard of it. They shouted as they shot, with a satisfaction not much less savage than the guttural trollic howls. The black-garbed Murdrall had been last to die, a porcupine quilled with arrows. No one cared to recover a shaft from that, even after it finally stopped thrashing. That evening, the second rain came, hours of drenching downpour with a sky full of roiling black clouds and stabbing lightning. Perrin had not smelled trollic scent since, and the ground had been washed clean of tracks. Most of their time had been spent avoiding White Cloak patrols, which everyone said were more numerous than in the past. The farmers Perrin had spoken to said the patrols seemed more interested in finding their prisoners again and those who had broken them free than in looking for trollocs. Quite a few of the men had gathered around Luke now. He was tall enough for his red-gold hair to show above their darker heads. He seemed to be talking, and they listening, and nodding. "Let's see what he has to say," Perrin said grimly. The Two Rivers men gave way before Fael and him, with only a little prodding. They were all intent on the red-coated lord, who was indeed holding forth. "So the village is quite secure now. Plenty of people gathered together to defend it. I must say I enjoy sleeping under a roof when I can. Mistress Alvir at the inn provides a tasty meal. Her bread is among the best I have ever eaten. There truly is nothing like fresh-baked bread and fresh-churned butter, and putting your feet up of an evening with a fine mug of wine, or some of Master Alvir's good brown ale." "Lord Luke was saying we should go to Emmons Field, Perrin," Kenley Ahan said, scrubbing his reddened nose with the back of a grimy hand. He was not the only one who had been unable to wash as often as he would like, and not the only one coming down with a cold, either. Luke smiled at Perrin, much the way he would have at a dog he expected to see do a trick. "The village is quite secure, but there is always a need for more strong backs." "We are hunting trollocs," Perrin said coolly. "Not everyone has left their farms yet, and every band we find and kill means farms not burned and more people with a chance to reach safety." Will Alcine barked a laugh. He was not so pretty with a red puffy nose and a spotty 6-day growth of beard. "We've not smelled a trollic in days. Be reasonable, Perrin. Maybe we've killed them all already." There were mutters of agreement.
"I do not mean to spread dissension," Luke spread his hands guilelessly. "No doubt you have had many great successes beside those we have heard of. Hundreds of trollocs killed, I expect. You may well have chased them all away. I can tell you Emmons Field is ready to give you all a hero's welcome. The same must be true at Watch Hill for those who live up that way. Any Devon riders?"
Will nodded, and Luke clapped him on the shoulder with a hollow good fellowship.
"A hero's welcome, without a doubt."
"Anyone who wants to go home can," Perrin said in a level voice. Fael directed a warning frown at him. This was no way to be a general. But he did not want anyone with him who did not want to be there. He did not want to be a general, for that matter. "Myself, I don't think the job is done yet, but it is your choice." No one took him up, though Will at least looked ready to, but 20 more stared at the ground and scuffed their boots in last year's leaves.
"Well," Luke said casually, "if you have no trollocs left to chase, perhaps it is time to turn your attentions to the White Cloaks. They are not happy at you Two Rivers folk deciding to defend yourselves. And I understand they meant to hang the lot of you in particular, as outlaws for stealing their prisoners.
Anxious frowns passed between a good many of the Two Rivers lads. It was then that Gaul came pushing through the crowd, followed close by Bane and Chiad. Not that the Aiel had to push, of course. The men cleared aside as soon as they realized who it was. Luke frowned at Gaul thoughtfully, perhaps disapprovingly. The Aielman stared back stony-faced. Will and Danil and the others brightened at the sight of the Aiel. Most still believed hundreds more were hiding somewhere in the thickets and forests. They never questioned why all those Aiel stayed hidden, and Perrin certainly never brought it up. If believing in a few hundred Aiel reinforcements helped them keep their courage, well and good.
"What did you find?" Perrin asked.
Gaul had been gone since the day before. He could move as fast as a man on horseback, faster in woods, and he could see more.
"Trollocs," Gaul replied, as though reporting the presence of sheep, "moving up through this well-named waterwood to the south. They number no more than 30, and I believe they mean to make camp on the edge of the forest and strike tonight. There are men still holding to the soil to the south."
He gave a sudden wolfish grin.
"They did not see me. They will have no warning."
Chiad leaned closer to Bane.
"He moves well enough for a stone dog," she whispered loudly enough to be heard 20 feet off. "He makes little more noise than a lame bull."
"Well, Will," Perrin said, "do you want to go to Emmons Field? You can shave and maybe find a girl to kiss while those Trollocs have supper tonight."
Will flushed a dark red.
"I will be wherever you are tonight, Ebarra," he said in a hard voice. "Nobody means to go home if there are Trollocs still about, Perrin," Kenley added.
Perrin looked around at the others, meeting only agreeing nods.
"What of you, Luke?
We would be pleased to have a lord and hunter for the horn with us. You could show us how it is done."
Luke smiled fractionally, a gash on stone that never came close to those cold blue eyes.
"I regret the defenses of Emmons Field still need me. I must see to protecting your people should the Trollocs come there in greater numbers than 30. Or the Children of the Light. My Lady Fahil,"
he held out a hand to assist her in mounting, but she shook her head.
"I will remain with Perrin, Lord Luke."
"A pity," he murmured, shrugging as if to say there was no accounting for women's taste.
Tugging on his wolf-embroidered gauntlets, he swung into the black stallion's saddle smoothly.
"Good luck to you, Master Golden Eyes. I do hope you all have good luck."
With a half-bow to Fahil, he whirled his tall horse showily and spurred him to a gallop that forced some of the men to leap out of his way. Fahil frowned at Perrin in a manner that suggested a lecture on rudeness when they were alone. He listened to Luke's horse until he could hear it no more, then turned to Gaul.
"Can we get ahead of the Trollocs? Be waiting somewhere before they reach, wherever they mean to stop?"
"The distances are right if we start now," Gaul said. "They are moving in a straight line and not hurrying. There is a night runner with them. It will be easier surprising them in their blankets than facing them awake."
He meant that the Two Rivers men might do better. There was no fear smell on him. There was certainly fear smell on some of the others, yet no one suggested that a confrontation with Trollocs up and alert, and a murderall to boot, might not be the best plan. They broke camp as soon as he gave the order, dousing the fires and scattering the ashes, gathering their few pots and mounting their ill-assorted horses and ponies. With the sentries in, Perrin reminded himself to have that word with them, they numbered nearly 70. Surely enough to ambush 30 Trollocs. Banal seen and Danil each still led half. It seemed the way to keep arguments down. With Billy Aldai and Kenley and others each heading 10 or so. Will, too. He was not too bad a fellow, usually, when he could keep his mind off the girls.
Fael rode Swallow close beside Stepper as they started south, with the Aiel running ahead.
"You truly do not trust him at all," she said. "You think he is a dark friend."
"I trust you and my bow and my axe," he told her. Her face looked sad and pleased at the same time, but it was the simple truth. For 2 hours, Gaul led them south before turning into the Waterwood, a tangle of towering oak and pine and leatherleaf, bushy bay trees and cone-shaped red oil trees, tall round-topped ash and sweetberry and black willow, with thickets of vine-woven brush below. 1,000 squirrels chittered on the branches, and thrushes and finches and redwings darted everywhere. Perrin smelled deer and rabbits, too, and foxes. Tiny streams abounded, and rush-bordered pools and ponds dotted the forest, often shaded but sometimes open, from less than 10 paces across to a few almost 50. The ground seemed sodden after all the rain it had received, squelching under the horse's hooves. Between a large willow-ringed pond and a narrow rivulet a pace wide, perhaps 2 miles into the wood, Gaul halted. Here the Trollocs would come if they continued as they had been. The three Aiel melted into the trees to make sure of that and bring back warning of their approach. Leaving Fael and 12 men to watch the horses, Perrin spread the others out in a narrow curve, a cup into which the Trollocs should march. After making certain each man was well hidden and knew what he was to do, he placed himself at the bottom of the cup, beside an oak with a trunk thicker than he was tall. Easing his axe in its belt loop, he knocked an arrow and waited. A light breeze blew in his face, swelling and falling. He should be able to smell the Trollocs long before they came in sight. They should be coming right at him. Touching the axe again, he waited. Minutes passed, an hour, more. How long before the shadow spawn appeared? Much longer in this damp, and bowstrings would need to be changed. The birds vanished a moment before the squirrels went silent. Perrin drew a deep breath and frowned. Nothing. On that breeze, he should surely be able to smell Trollocs as soon as the animals sensed them. A vagrant gust brought on the putrid stink like centuries-old sweat and rot. Whirling, he shouted,
"They're behind us! Rally to me! Two Rivers to me!"
Behind, the horses.
"Fael!"
Screams and shouts erupted from every side, howls and savage cries. A ram-horned Trolloc leaped into the open 20 paces away, raising a long, curved bow. Perrin drew fletchings to ear and fired in one smooth motion, reaching for another shaft as soon as his arrow cleared bow. His broadhead point took the Trolloc between its eyes. It bellowed once as it fell. And its arrow, the size of a small spear, took Perrin in the side like a hammer blow. Gasping with shock, he hunched over, dropping the bow and fresh arrow alike. Pain spread out in sheets from the black-fletched shaft. It quivered when he drew breath, and every quiver shot out new pain. 2 more Trollocs leaped over their dead companion, wolf snout and goat horns, black-mailed shapes half again as tall as Perrin and twice as broad. Baying, they rushed at him, curved swords upraised. Forcing himself upright, he gritted his teeth and snapped the thumb-thick arrow off short, pulled his axe free and rushed to meet them. Howling, he realized dimly. Howling with rage that filmed his eyes red. They towered over him, their armor all spikes at elbows and shoulders, but he swung his axe in a frenzy as if trying to cut down a tree with every blow. For Adora. For Dazelle.
"My mother!" he screamed. "Burn you, my mother!"
Abruptly, he realized he was hacking at bloody shapes on the ground. Growling, he made himself stop, shaking with the effort as much as with the pain in his side. There was less shouting now, fewer screams. Was anyone left but him?
"Rally to me! 2 Rivers to me!"
2 Rivers,
someone shouted frantically, off through the damp woods, and then another.
2 Rivers!
2. Only 2?
"Fael!"
he cried.
"Oh, light Fael!"
A flicker of black flowing through the trees announced a Murdrawl before he could see it clearly. Snake-like black armor down his chest, inky cloak hanging undisturbed by its running. As it came closer, it slowed to a sinuous, assured walk. It knew he was hurt, knew him for easy meat. Its pale-faced, eyeless stare stabbed him with fear.
"Fail,"
it said mockingly. Its voice made the name sound like burned leather crumbling.
"Your Fael was delicious."
Roaring, Perrin hurled himself at him. A black-bladed sword turned his first stroke, and his second, his third. The thing's slug-white face became fixed with concentration, but it moved like a viper, like lightning. For the moment, he had it on the defensive. For the moment. Blood trickled down his side. His side burned like a forge fire. He could not keep this up. And when his strength failed, that sword would find his heart. His foot slipped in the mud, churned up beneath his boots. The fade's blade drew back. And a blurring sword half-severed the eyeless head, so it fell over on one shoulder in a fountain of black blood. Stabbing blindly, the Murdrawl staggered forward, stumbling, refusing to die completely, still instinctively trying to kill. Perrin scrambled out of its path, but his attention was all for the man coolly wiping his blade with a fistful of leaves. Ivan's color-shifting cloak hung down his back.
"Elana sent me to find you. I almost didn't. The way you have been moving, but 70 horses do leave tracks."
The dark, slender warder seemed as composed as if he were lighting his pipe before a fireplace.
"The Trollocs were not linked to that."
He indicated the Murdrawl with his sword. It had fallen, but still stabbed randomly.
"More's the pity. But if you can gather your people together, they might not be willing to try you without one of the Faceless to goad them. I would estimate about 100 to begin. A few less now. You have bloodied them some."
He began a calm survey of the shadows beneath the trees, only the blade in his hand indicating anything out of the ordinary. For a bare moment, Perrin gaped. Elana wanted him? She had sent Ivan? Just in time to save his life. Shaking himself, he raised his voice again.
"Two rivers to me! For the love of the light, rally to me! Here! Rally here!"
This time he kept it up until familiar faces appeared, stumbling through the trees. Blood-streaked faces, often as not. Shocked, staring faces. Some men half-supported others, and some had lost their bows. The Aiel were among them, apparently unhurt, except that Gaul limped slightly.
"They did not come as we expected," was all the Aielman said.
The night was colder than we expected. There was more rain than we expected. That was how he said it. Fael seemed to materialize with the horses. With half the horses, including Stepper and Swallow, and 9 of the 12 men he had left with her. A scrape marred one cheek, but she was alive. He tried to hug her, but she pushed his arms away, muttering angrily over the broken-off arrow, even while she gently pulled his coat away from the thick shaft in an effort to examine where it had gone in. Perrin studied the men around him. They had stopped coming now, yet there were faces missing. Kenley Ahan, Billy Aldai, Tevin Marwyn. He made himself name the missing, made himself count them. 27. 27 not there.
"Did you bring all the wounded?" he asked dully. "Is anybody left out there?"
Fael's hand trembled on his side. Her expression as she frowned at his wound was a blend of worry and fury. She had a right to be angry. He should never have gotten her into this.
"Only the dead," Ban Alcine said, in a voice as leaden as his face.
Will looked to be frowning at something just out of sight.
"I saw Kenley," he said. "His head was in the crook of an oak, but the rest of him was down at the foot. I saw him."
His cold won't bother him now.
He sneezed and looked startled. Perrin sighed heavily and wished he had not. Pain shooting up his side clenched his teeth. Fayil, a green and gold silk scarf wadded in her hand, was trying to pull his shirt out of his breeches. He pushed her hands away despite her scowl. There was no time for tending wounds now.
"Wounded on the horses," he said when he could speak. "Ivan, will they attack us?"
The forest seemed too still.
"Ivan!"
The warder appeared, leading a dark gray gelding with a fierce eye. Perrin repeated his question.
"Perhaps, perhaps not. On their own, Trollocs kill whomever is easiest. Without a halfman, they would probably rather find a farm than someone who might put arrows in them. Make sure everyone who can stand upright carries a bow with an arrow knocked, even if they cannot draw it. They may decide the price is too high for the fun."
Perrin shivered. If the Trollocs did attack, they would have as much fun as a dance at Sunday. Ivan and the Aiel were the only ones really ready to fight back. And Fayil. Her dark eyes shone with fury. He had to get her to safety. The warder did not offer his own horse for the wounded, which made sense. The animal was not likely to let anyone else on its back, and a war-trained horse with its master in the saddle would be a formidable weapon if the Trollocs came again. Perrin tried to put Fayil up on Swallow, but she stopped him.
"The wounded, you said," she told him softly. "Remember?"
To his disgust, she insisted he ride stepper. He expected the others to protest after he had brought them to disaster, but no one did. There were just enough horses for those who could not walk and those unable to walk far. Grudgingly, he admitted that he was one of the latter. So he ended up in his saddle. Half the other riders had to cling to theirs. He sat upright, gritting his teeth to do it. Those who walked or stumbled, and some who rode, clutched their bows as if they meant salvation. Perrin carried one too, and so did Fayil, though he doubted she could even draw Two Rivers' longbow. It was appearance that counted now, illusion that might see them safe. Like Ivan, alert as a coiled whip, the three Aiel looked unchanged as they glided ahead, spears stuck through the harness of the bow cases on their backs, horn bows in hand and ready. The rest, including himself, were a ragbag remnant, nothing like the band he had led here, so confident and full of his own pride. Yet illusion worked as well as reality. For the first mile through the tangle, vagrant breezes brought him Trolloc stink, the scent of Trolloc's shadowing, stalking. Then the stench slowly faded and vanished as the Trollocs fell behind, diluted by mirage. Fayil walked beside Stepper, one hand on Perrin's leg as though she meant to hold him up. Now and then she looked up at him, smiling encouragingly but with worry creasing her forehead. He smiled back as best he could, trying to make her think he was all right. 27. He could not stop the names from running through his head. Kali Garin, Jared Adair, Dale Altarin, and Ren Chandon. 27 Two Rivers folk he had killed with his stupidity. 27. They took the most direct route back out of the Waterwood, breaking clear sometime in the afternoon. It was hard to tell exactly how late, with the sky still blanketed in gray and everything blandly shadowed. High grass pasture, dotted with trees, stretched in front of them, and some scattered sheep and a few farmhouses in the distance. No smoke rose from any of the chimneys. If there was anyone in those houses, something hot would have been cooking in the fireplace. The nearest rising smoke plume looked 5 miles off at least.
"We should find a farm for the night," Ivan said. "Some place under cover in case it rains again. A fire. Food." He looked at the Two Rivers men and added, "Water and bandages." Perrin only nodded. The warder was better than he at knowing the right thing to do. Old Billy Conger, with his head full of ale, was probably better.
he just let Stepper follow Ivan's gray. Before they had gone much beyond a mile, a faint thread of music caught Perrin's ear, fiddles and flutes playing merry tunes. At first he thought he was dreaming, but then the others heard too, exchanging incredulous looks, then relieved grins. Music meant people, and happy people by the sound, someone celebrating. That anyone might have something to celebrate was enough to pick their feet up somewhat.